the time. You better think I'll lose my mind, 'cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. All right.
All right, here we are on CITR 101.9 FM. This is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, live for the next hour. Usually it's an hour and a half, but we have the sport. It's that time of year where the sport broadcasts live events every now and then. So sometimes half an hour gets shaved off the show, which is okay, no problem, because we have lots of great music ahead. So my name's Matt, and don't forget, you can follow this show on Twitter. Go to OzStranded, O-Z-S-T-R-A-N-D-E-D, and type that same word into Google, and you'll come up with the blog, so OzStranded, and the blog with over 100 podcasts and a set list each week of what I play. And this week, I'm going to be playing some music up first from Magic Dirt. They're a real seminal Australian rock band from the 90s, who stuck around for a long, long time, and an incredibly good live band featuring the lead singer, Adelita Sursum, who still is my vote for probably the most amazing front woman in rock in the last 20 years. So that's coming up, a few tracks from them going back to 96 first. But also, most importantly, today we have a live studio guest. Weldon Hunter is a local poet here from Vancouver. He has been on the show before, and we're going to be chatting with Weldon all about a lot of things, but primarily about his new anthology called The Stella and Pony Years. He's a PhD student here at UBC and a really excellent local poet. So we'll introduce Weldon soon after these tracks. So first up, as I said, so this is Magic Dirt going back to 1996. So Magic Dirt are from Geelong, which is an industrial city in Victoria, the state of Victoria. So it's on the coast from Melbourne. I visited there once. I can't remember exactly how long it took, but I don't know, maybe an hour or so on the train, hour and a half. So it's kind of a steel town, and some really interesting bands have come out of that city, including Magic Dirt, and they're one of the great bands I got to see numerous times back home. And as I said, the front woman, Adelita, is just mesmerizing, and she's now undertaken a solo career following the tragic, untimely death of Dean, who was a bass player from this band. And from everything that I've read about this guy Dean, he was just one of those very committed musicians who cared a lot about his peers, and he was very loved and respected in the music community, and did a lot of mentoring for younger people. And he passed away just a couple of years ago, like, you know, not even age 40. It was I'm not exactly sure what the cause of death was, but anyway, let's get into music. So this is Magic Dirt. This is a single called Sparrow from the Friends in Danger record, which when it came out was a little bit too much for a lot of people, I think. They were a very noisy band, but I always loved this track. Let's get into it. This is Magic Dirt from 1996, and we have Weldon Hunter, a local poet, being interviewed later on the show. We'll be right back.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Refreshing indeed, and that's the great thing about a radio station like this is you can have so much creative freedom to play music that you're inspired by. Or so I play a lot of music from the past, from bands that I saw growing up in Australia, and so the two songs I just heard there were from Magic Dirt, a band that I saw a lot in at an impressionable age, I suppose, a very noisy band from the mid-90s, and they were discovered by the folks from Sonic Youth pretty quickly. It was 1992, and they'd only played a handful of gigs, and somehow Sonic Youth discovered them, and they supported Sonic Youth and Pavement on an Australian tour in 1993, and of course it was on from there once you get that sort of exposure. And they were really a very good live band. That last track there, I Was Cruel, was kind of an epic that they used to play, you know, last in their set. And as I said, it came to a tragic end for the band when Dean Turner passed away. He was the bass player. He had a rare form of cancer, tissue cancer apparently, and passed away at age 37 only a couple of years ago. And so the singer Adelita has put out a very, very good solo record. Her name's Adelita Sersen, S-R-S-E-N. But her solo project is under the name simply Adelita, A-D-A-L-I-T-A. So I definitely recommend checking her out online. Anyway, this is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show. That was Magic Dirt going back to 1996 from the Friends in Danger album, Magic Dirt from Geelong in the state of Victoria in Australia. So up next, we'll get into some new Australian music. Before we chat to Weldon Hunter, he is our studio guest today, and it's really great to have a poet join us. Weldon is a poet and PhD student, and we'll be talking to him very soon. He'll be reading some poems from the Stella and Pony Years, his anthology that has just been released. But first up, let's get into some new music from Australia. So this is a band that I always love it when, you know, I mean, there's just so much music out there, and how do you even start to prepare a show like this? You know, it's like I love it when something kind of comes to me that I really am grabbed by, you know. And this band, the Valerie Trails, their CD landed in my little pigeonhole here. They're an interesting band. I'll get into them in more detail in coming shows, but I just wanted to play one track at least today. I really like to interview them, actually, because they got a bit of an interesting story. I believe one of them spent some time in Papua New Guinea, and they're kind of an expat band because the singer, Andrew, currently lives in Houston, Texas. And I think this record was kind of, you know, back and forth across the internet with his brother in Australia and another chap. They're a three-piece, and they piece songs together. And this song is a lovely track called Feline off a brand-new EP. So the band is called The Valerie Trails. And let's play this track now. It's called Feline. We're having a bit of a trouble getting this started. Apologies, folks. We might go on another track and come back with that one. This track next is by a band called the Low Lakes, who are playing here in CMJ, the festival in New York City at the moment. I'll tell you about the Low Lakes soon. We'll see if we can get that Valerie Trials track. Don't worry.
Sail on my tiny light. Never let it be forsaken. Keep it burning through the night. Your brothers, you have wasted all these years. You are not like all the others. You have wrestled with your fears.
So here we are, right back on live radio. This is CITR, and that was a band called the Valerie Trails from Australia. And as I said, they're interesting because they're kind of an expat band. That one of the members lives in Houston, Texas, and he has written songs and I guess sent them back and forth to his compatriots in Australia and pieced together their latest EP. They've, from what I can tell, they've been putting out records. Geez, I put out three EPs. That's pretty in the 1 year. That's pretty interesting. But I definitely want to play them some more in the future. But that's just a little taster for you, the Valerie Trails. And just before that, we heard a band called Low Lakes with another a mellow song there called Cold Company. They're from Melbourne. And I played them because they're playing in New York City at the CMJ Showcase. It's a really big kind of music industry extravaganza there. They're playing on Wednesday the 17th in New York City. So, yeah, interesting band there from Melbourne. Cold Company was the song. So I'll be right back now after this with we have Weldon has joined us here in the studio, Weldon Hunter, local poet here from Vancouver, and he'll be spending time with us for the next half hour. So, yeah, that's something to look forward to in a matter of minutes.
On Friday, October 19th, local folk roots extremist Corbin Murdoch and the Nautical Mile celebrate the release of a new digital EP with two of Vancouver's finest. They've got Eden Fine Day, best known as the front woman of Vancouver's beloved garage rockers Vancouver, and Winter Mitts, everyone's favorite semi-orchestral bilingual genre band. There will be a constellation of quintessentially Vancouver bands aligning for the first time. So save the date, October 19th at the China Cloud, 524 Main Street. Sponsored by CITR 101.9.
Okay, this is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show here on CITR Radio. And don't forget there, go to Google and type in Oz Stranded and you'll come up with the show blog. So let's move on from the new Australian music to welcome Weldon Hunter live to the studio here. Hello, Weldon.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. I wonder, the last time might have been even almost a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Weldon is an old friend, and he is one of the best poets here in Vancouver and currently undertaking a PhD here in the Department of English.
Yes.
Yeah, Weldon, thanks so much for coming in and bringing in a copy of The Stella and Pony Years, which is your latest anthology. What came before this? You've been at it for a while now with three published works.
Yeah, this is my fourth chapbook, which is, as you say, an anthology, kind of a collection of. I'll get into that, but it's also that I was doing a blog, which used to be the blog used to be a print magazine that I did in Edmonton that was co-edited with other people. It was called Value Villages Booby Trapped. And then it turned into a blog that was just basically me publishing my own poetry on it. Before that, though, and actually outside of the blog, the previous three chapbooks, Navigando Pela Internet, O Poeta Militante is my first one, and then Trash Talk was 2008. And they also were works. They were much shorter, but they had my poems that had been originally published on the blog. And they were put out by a small press out of Nanaimo called Ruining Your Vacation Press. Mm. And that was my friend Lindsay who did that.
Oh, great.
So this one is just the fourth and largest. And it's clearing out the vaults of all the old poems on the blog, basically. And because the blog is no longer on the internet. It's been taken over by a Japanese kitchen website.
Oh, I think I actually discovered that.
If you Google my name, Weldon Gardner Hunter, you'll find a kitchen blog.
Yeah.
It's not me.
So that's concerning. I mean, but all those poems have been saved in hard copy form.
I've got PDFs of them. Oddly, I have no, like the old ways when you used to write poems on sheets of paper, or maybe you'd print them out, but I don't actually have that. I have PDFs.
here's the thing. We've touched on an obvious issue with the internet now, that things can disappear like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did actually, kill my blog. I made sure that I didn't want it on it.
Okay.
I was tired of it. But then this is my URL got taken over by the kitchen people.
Okay.
It's an interesting blog, though. I, as a matter of fact, I was thinking of reading some of the kitchen appliances. It's called Kitchen Appliances. But no one today.
Well, there you go. This show is infinitely educational. Not only are you going to hear some great poetry, but you could learn about Japanese kitchen implements if you saw.
There's some good kitchen tips in there. Although the website seems to also have a lot of strange gender roles being propounded in it. That if you read it and get angry.
Do you want to go right into, just to give people an idea of exactly who you are, into reading a poem of your choice? And,
sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And all my poems are pretty short, so it shouldn't be a big problem. This one I'm going to read is called Formula Off, and sometimes I just shorten it to F Off. So this poem is Formula Off. The teenage mothers at center court spy plates of huge fish char-grilled or articles in an invading army's Esperanto playboys. These are the sullen pigments which seek the unified source at the heart of each technological step, or in a thought experiment which posits that there are two Winnebagos with Werner Herzog in them. The sound of reality, dropping on ineffectual ideas, out in the night, in the brown of last year, stuck to the spindrift pages, and haunted Gabriel Allen, art was wrapped inside.
Beautiful. And so what was that poem called?
Formula Off.
Formula Off.
I don't know what the title means anymore. I was onto something at the time.
And what? Because this collection is between 2005 and
it's more like 2005 to 2011. But we put down for copyright 2012, I guess. Not that copyright really comes into it, but I'd say all these poems were written in the 6 year from about 2005 to 2011.
Right.
So that one would have been probably 2005 because it's at the start of the book. The book is divided into four sections.
Yeah.
So it's four mini chapbooks stuck into one big chapbook.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the organization.
Yeah. And infinitely readable, especially on public transport, because that's what I'm endeavoring to do. I have my copy here. And public transport is perfect because from my reading of it so far, it's such an urban collection of poems. There's so many references to the city, like we've got here. One poem, Ready Making, references to the public flowers. You've got talk of passing cars in Where to Stop. And there's a poem called Traffic Islands. Another poem mentions traffic on the raising freeways. You are an urban man, and literally you pounded the streets with me with family fundraising for public outreach.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my poems probably have that because they were written. The main two cities I lived in when this was being written, these poems, were Victoria and Vancouver. And originally this book, I wanted to call it Traffic Islands, which was a title I'd had since 2005, and it was going to be the title of a book. And I always liked that title being the sort of beatnik sounding, it sounded like a collection that you could have in a City Lights pocket poet series, Traffic Islands by Weldon Hunter. But the funny thing is every time I considered that title for this book and I'd run it past people, they'd go, oh, it's so boring. And then it was going to be called Room for Cream, and both those titles, Traffic Islands and Room for Cream, are titles of the sections. And Room for Cream then turned out to be a new coffee shop somewhere in town, and that just bugged me. I was like, I can't share the name of a coffee shop. And so I just kind of at the last minute chart changed it to Stella and Pony Ears. But that, even though that sounds more pastoral, it's actually a reference to two types of car, the Subaru Stella and the Hyundai Pony. So, yeah, and I like it because it has this sweep of, since it's a collection of 7 years worth or 6 years worth of material, that it has this like slight, I think someone called it a pretentious title. And someone else called it a very trendy or hip title. And even though they'll sound like disparagements, I'll take them as compliments because I think they do seem to. Even though if you've never heard of me and you see that I've got a book that, it's the Stella and Pony years, my salad days in a way.
I'll
take it because I have to, you know, give it a title. So, yeah. And it turns out to have been a pretty popular one because it sounds a bit more enigmatic than any of the others, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. I would not have thought it was a car, although there is a car drawn on the front.
Yeah, which is my sense of, I didn't know what to do with the cover, so Jeff Bosworth, who we both know, who was a talented artist here in town, who I got to do the cover, I basically said to him two things. I want to have cars on it because I want people not to think it's a book about a girl and her pony, although I like that having a possible extra connotation. And I wanted it to look a bit like a Joe Brainerd, who's another artist who did a lot of covers for books from New York poets in the 60s. And I wanted it to maybe look a bit like a Joe Brainerd cover. And since I'm taking a lot of inspiration from these New York poets of the 60s who I've studied, like Ted Berrigan and Ron Padgett and people like that, that probably, to bring it back, probably is why there's this big city kind of inspiration. And even the title poem, Stella and Pony Ears, is about part. It seems to be in a setting where it's in a parking lot, but people are going to that are bird watching, and that someone's trying to break into the cars of the bird watching people, and there's some sort of strange connection between them. So it seems to be on the edge of the city and country there.
Yeah.
If I were to reanalyze my own poem, the problem with PhD students is that you can have an industry of talking about your own work, but I'll let people decide that themselves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of the city, because it's so, evocative of this city in particular, there's so many references, I mean, subtle references that I know living here in Vancouver for the last few years, or even as blunt references like the entrance to North Vancouver.
Oh, yes.
One track. And then the Bosman Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I guess, close to my heart because I work for the organization, the Portland Hotel Society, that runs that as a social housing research project. Now, what is that poem in reference to? Was that written before it became what it is?
Yeah, now? It was written before, when I lived in Victoria, and before I moved here, I would come and stay in Vancouver. You know, I take day trips or weekend trips from Victoria to Vancouver. And I would stay at a hostel. I think I eventually started staying at this hostel that's down on Granville and Nelson called Same Sun. But before that, I would stay at various places that would be cheap. And I never stayed at Bosman's Hotel, but I remember always, it used to have a bar attached to it called the Side Bar. And so someone I knew who lived in the city had tipped me off. There's one of the secret bars of the city's Bosman's Hotel. So I just kind of used it as the setting of this poem. Called Tom Veach. Maybe I'll read it.
Yeah,
Tom Veach at Bosman's Hotel, 1060 Howe Street, Vancouver. And Tom Veach is a very strange poet. He's pretty obscure, but a poet that had a book out in the 70s called Death College. So I was reading him a lot at this period, so it's kind of an homage in a way. So Tom Veach at Bosman's Hotel, 1060 Howe Street, Vancouver. In my hotel room, I discovered I kind of like instant coffee, and I found a vending machine that takes only nickels and dispenses full meals in pill form. Plus, it makes lush portrayals of the countryside and prints them in solid, vivid colors onto hard-backed cardboard postcards. And so from here on in, art will warm my shivery legs. It's funny because that poem ends almost the exact same way as the first one I read about art comes into it.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember that about those two.
And it's so interesting to get a different angle on the Bosman Hotel because, yeah, just for the listeners, it is very much changed now. It is a national research project, part of the national research project for the At Home Project, which is the Mental Health Commission of Canada. So there are a number of residents there living who are formerly street-entrenched people with mental health issues and addictions, and they are now housed in the Bosman Hotel. And so that's how I see it, and it's so interesting to see it a different take on it from a different time.
I'm glad it has a resonance because it was sort of a random choice. I just remember walking by that hotel and it seeming very like, maybe it seemed to have the seeds for its future greatness or something.
Yeah.
But looking at, you know, these kind of nondescript motels that are all actually rapidly in a lot of ways in Vancouver disappearing. Mm. One of the things as a poet you want to do is, at least I do, is like to sort of, instead of taking a photograph and just present it, it's like remembering it through a different way.
Yeah.
And preserving it. And I think with our attitude, a lot of our attitudes as contemporary citizens of Vancouver, well, this is really great. I bet you it's probably going to get torn down in 5 years.
Yeah,
this sort of, let's write poems about it in my...
I see.
Other people might take pictures, but I so like then, to...
So then we should all be writing poems about music venues.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a local poet, Donata Mancini, who's doing a project which is just... I'm not sure what the contours of it are, but he's... has a huge list of all the former venues in Vancouver for the last 40 years, and it's a huge list. And some of them are really strange-sounding places that sound kind of magical.
Like
the X-Transit Club on 41st and Cambie. It's like, oh, I wish I could have gone there.
Well, I mean, and there must be a few places in the city where Jimi Hendrix played, because he lived here at some point.
Well, there's the Jimi Hendrix Museum, sort of, which is on... Union Street.
Off Main Street and Union, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get, actually, it's time to get into some music as well. We'll be right back. We're speaking with Weldon Hunter, who is a local poet here from Vancouver, and he's been reading poems from the Stella and Pony Years, which is his latest anthology. So we'll be right back on CITR.
Despite the fact that 8 in 10 Canadians are against warrantless and costly online spying, the government remains stubborn, set to cement this scheme into law. With their huge PR budget, they've unleashed a reckless and irresponsible campaign that suggests warrantless collection of our private data is on par with a phone book. We can't let them trick Canadians. Go to www.openmedia.ca now to find out what you can do to get involved and stop this smoke and mirrors campaign the government has started.
This is Pure Dracula from Maclu. And you are tuned in to CITR Radio. 101.9 FM in Vancouver. CITR.ca.
And we're back here live. This is Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show on CITR Radio. We're down at the UBC. That's where we broadcast from, the University of British Columbia. And quite an obscurity there, a song by a band I had no idea existed until Weldon Hunter told me about them. Weldon is a local poet here in Vancouver. He's our live studio guest. Weldon, who are the Rainyard?
I don't know anything about them except, obviously, the last time I was on your show, I was here to play Australian indie pop. So as the other secret of my life is, I spend a lot of time being a record collector. And the Rainyard were a band from Australia, and they were on Summershine Records. And that's all I know about them. And they're jangly. And I think that they're being rediscovered because I saw some... I'm on Facebook, I'm on something called Twee Lovers Club, and... someone put up an old demo tape of theirs, and it's got some great jangly songs. So,
oh, those beautiful melodies. Well, I can add one more bit of information. They are from Perth.
Oh.
That's what YouTube's here.
Okay. Well, that's probably why they weren't very well known, because that's far out of the way. Yeah.
It is. Pre-internet, you know.
Because mm-hmm.
The big bands that really pushed it moved, like the Hoodoo Gurus, they moved from Perth eastward, and the Triffids and all those bands decided... But I guess there's a lot of great bands from Perth who just stuck around. But yeah, cool. That's a band to rediscover, and I'll play some more in other weeks.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Weldon Hunter. So Weldon is a local poet. He's a PhD student here at UBC. And I guess, given what we're talking about music, I noticed there is one poem in particular in your anthology that is about music, I guess. There's a reference to music. Here Come the Hot Stepper.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about this poem?
I'm trying to remember this one. The title is stolen from, a reggae song. And I think I'm supposed to be Here Comes, but for some reason when I first printed it, I took the plural off it, so I just left it. And I'll have to read it, because to read it to remember what I might have been on about. But I think there's probably some of my attitudes towards music coming through in it. So you want me to read this one?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'll go through it. It's one of the longer ones, but it probably won't take 2 minutes. Here Come the Hot Stepper. Heavily colognedslick R&B is not dead, but its popularity has faded somewhat. I missed the subtle thrusts, accompanied by a sudden twitch or two of my left feet. In the new ordinariness, we can appreciate the folk festival again. Give me a hiccuping hillbilly any day, the arched body hanging from the coat rack. Music is not a universal language as some people pitch. It's a milkshake of frozen lumps and fluid sounds which storm to clarity. It seems that every cut is a clarification these days. Just because you like fiddle music, that doesn't make you a Celtics fan. There is a way of seeing a song on the open mic circuit. It begins innocently enough with some strummed acoustic chords and doesn't stand out. But it recalls all the fragmented songs you've written at the lake. It has been miniaturized and diluted, and at every tune it whistles freely. So now I want to dance in circles on something other than my own hind legs. Maybe someone could put me in a red wheelbarrow and wheel me onto the dance floor? So that's the end of that. I guess it's me kind of... sounds like me kind of vaguely complaining about bad open mic songs or... the kind of music you hear at folk festivals. Like, seemed maybe it was might have been inspired, if I vaguely remember, by someone at our old job. Hmm. You know, we used to work with people who would be in bands, and they would ask us to come out to their shows, and you come out to their shows. And I remember one show at the Piccadilly, which is another a lost venue in Vancouver. It was on Pender Street, and seeing some bands the band that we were going to see coming through, and it might have been something along the lines of bad. local bands that sounded like, you know, Sublime knockoffs and things or Alanis Morissette wannabes. And it was a very bad night at the one time I've been to the Pick. I remember that.
Yeah,
so I think it might have been written shortly after that, and it has that involved in it, I guess.
Well,
And that goes out to Rosie Petal.
Yeah.
That poem.
Thanks for calling, Rosie. Called live from the studio to say hi to Walden. Thank you. Thanks for listening. So this is Stranded. We're here with Walden Hunter. We'll be right back. Not much left of the show, but we'll keep chatting. Won't be long.
Great.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit LiveMusicVancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. Liveband.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it Monday
from 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers!
Okay, so here we are back on CITR Radio. This is Stranded, and Walden Hunter, a local poet here in Vancouver, has come in and he's been chatting and talking about the Stella, well, reading poems from the Stella and Pony years. So, Walden, that last poem you read referenced music, and you are an avid gig goer here in the city. Who else do you recommend? We got a couple of tracks here.
Yeah, so I've recommended. So there was a festival just the end of August, start of September. It was called the Shoutback Fest, and it was I don't know who exactly organized it, but the people at the Mansion, which is the feminist punk rock house, which is on Adirondack, and some various other venues, but not venues, but people's houses. It was a little punk fest that was a queer core punk rock fest that was based around town, and so there were shows in people's apartment buildings and stuff, and I got to see Menopause, who were a three-girl hardcore band, at a place called the Moon Tower, which is on Commercial and 12th, which is the third floor of an apartment building. So people were moshing, and you were worried that people might get thrown out the window, but no one did, but the Menopause played it there, and they were quite excellent, so I recommend them.
Let's play a track from Menopause.
Back as you do you take my place?
Okay, we're back here on Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show. That was a band called Menopause from Vancouver, a hardcore band, a female-fronted hardcore band. We heard the tracks Mixtape, No Hymen, and Marion's Birthday Sermon. Yeah, great old-school hardcore there. And we're playing this as a suggestion from Weldon Hunter, who is still here in the studio with us. And so good news, people, in terms of we actually do have another half hour to go. It's a little bit odd. So the sports is going to be broadcasting from 7, but only online. So if you're listening to this live on your radio in the car or at home, you'll be hearing me for the next half hour. But if you're online hearing the sports, I believe that's how it works. Which is a shame because that means we're probably losing a lot of people right now. But anyway, we'll just keep going regardless. this show goes on, and hopefully the podcast will get the whole hour and a half. Anyway, here we are. We're still talking with Wellness. That gives us a whole another half hour to talk to do some.
I can read the whole book.
Yeah, interesting spontaneous radio, including actually I have right here a copy of Howl, the classic by Allen Ginsberg.
Yeah.
Awesome. We actually can bring this out. Like, this was sitting here on a table here in CITR when I walked in this afternoon, and I was like, how serendipitous, a classic poem, and I'm interviewing a poet, not only a poet, but an academic.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about Howl and your thoughts on it all?
It's good that it shows that there's evidence that there are people on campus who are reading poetry. I suspect it's probably for a class or something, maybe some professors teaching a class that involves reading Allen Ginsberg's Howl. I think someone actually does have a class, I'm not sure if it's here at UBC though, on banned literature, and I think it's the anniversary of when Howl had to go to court in the late 50s for being obscene, and the court has basically had dismissed that argument. So it was about 50-60 years ago, I guess, since that happened. What I know about Howl is, as I was saying kind of earlier, that I guess as a poet, you sort of, when people ask me sometimes what would you do, what would you recommend to people who want to write poetry, just read lots of it and then start copying it. And so my kind of way into poetry a lot, it took me a while, was to be really frustrated in a way because I'm really interested in the beats. And of course, you hear about guys like Ginsberg and Kerouac and a lot of them when you're a young person and you're trying to read or write poetry. And I was always interested in them, but I always thought maybe my thing I didn't like so much about them was the, I don't know how to put it, self-mythologizing and some aspects of them that didn't seem quite as down-to-earth as maybe I wanted to be reading. I always thought Howl, though, was a really great book in that, to me, it's a really funny poem, even though it's actually really serious and has very, you know, serious implications for writing about the 1950s and the kind of society that Allen Ginsberg is railing against. But for me, I always thought Howl was just a book of a poem of really great, strange images. I can't remember any specific ones right now, but there's that line, boxcars, boxcars, boxcars. So I always like that kind of play with language. So I've always read Howl as kind of a really like liberating work for like as a poet who wants to write about humor, but through the beats. I discovered the New York School of Poets, who are writing at the same time and often are put in the same category as the Beats because they also were living in New York, a lot of them. So poets like Frank O'Hara and I guess I'm thinking of James Schuyler as well, but just a different kind of writing at the same time but often sharing. And I think Frank O'Hara is the real poet that you could compare Ginsberg to, that they would have known each other and they would have written pretty similarly but with really complete differences in sometimes like subject matter. And so you would never, but actually the other famous pocket poets book besides Howl is the one that Frank O'Hara did called Lunch Poems, which has the orange and blue cover, and it's starting to become a bit more well known now because it had a revival. It was mentioned on Mad Men, and the character in Mad Men is reading a poem from Lunch Poems. So it's good to see that the Pocket Poet series are circulating still in the same way they're supposed to. That you found that book just lying around. But Howl's always been a poem I've really liked. But I think the unusual thing is I take it as sort of a funny poem in a lot of ways.
Well, I'm gonna actually take this home and read it over the next week or so, because it's been years and years since I've read it, and I want to kickstart my own journey into poetry. And you've been very helpful for me to start reading poetry again. Mm-hmm. Let's face it, a lot of us, you know, have, like, we have every excuse in the world not to read, don't we, everyone? But you know, it's not hard to have an anthology of poems in your backpack, sitting on the 99 bus, which I did it down here, and I will do so afterwards. Great. So yeah, thanks so much for filling us in on that history too, like with the Beats. And I know you've you have done readings out of town as well. So you've actually read them in New York.
Yeah, I did a reading in New York back in 2007 with my good friend Mike Hauser, who I also did a book with, a short chapbook. We did a book called Art Tasers Monthly, and so it was 2008. No, it was 2008 when I read there, and it was I had a chapbook come out just called Trash Talk. And what was really great about the New York reading was because I'd studied these New York poets, New York School poets like Ted Berrigan, and who are kind of well known in, if you're a poet who studies these guys, and they're becoming more and more sort of influential on the, I guess, the younger poets, the poets under 40 or just around the age I'm at, which is around that period, is that they're really important poets like Ted Berrigan and then in the 60s, Ann Waldman and Bernadette Mayer and stuff like that. So when I went and got invited to do a reading with Mike in New York, I thought, well, this is a great, even though I had to pay to go out there. And I thought, well, this is great because New York is such an epicenter for me and the kind of writing and the way I write is so wrapped up in the kind of aesthetic that what really struck me is, first of all, when I got there, some of the poets, they were mainly there to see Mike because he's a bit more well-known. He'd definitely be more well-known than me to those guys because I'm just a Canadian poet on the West Coast. But people that were there to see Mike were people like the son of the guy I did my MA thesis on, which is Ted Berrigan. So Eddie Berrigan, who's a great poet in his own right. Wow. John Colletti was there. He's a really great New York poet. Jim Burley, who's a very kind of infamous local New York poet. A bunch of dudes, actually. That was one of the things with that group. So I apologize for the list being completely like a sausage party. But Arlo Quint, who's a great New York poet, was also there. And I realized, well, these are basically the fourth or fifth generation of the exact same school of poetry that I've studied.
Oh, that's incredible.
I felt very much like, I feel like in a strange way that I'm in it now.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other moment, which was really great for me, is as a kid growing up in Red Deer, Alberta, and I know you have roots there.
That's right.
Is that I used to take out this book from the library all the time called Kerouac and Friends, and it was a great book of just articles from the time of the beatniks and the beats, you know, the beats, beatniks kind of idea. And so it was like newspaper articles about the scourge, or there'd be defenses of them. So it was contemporary kind of documents about it, but a lot of photographs, and it would always have these photographs of poets coming out of some like strange tavern in Greenwich Village or in Soho, and would have, you know, have headings like Washington poets make the scene, and there'd be these guys in like work shirts and jeans, and they'd have these kind of like big notebooks that would have their poems in it, and you know they just came out of a reading, but they came out of one of those. One of the pictures had these guys coming out of one of those basement bars, so they're standing at the top of a place that you had to walk upstairs to get out of or downstairs to get into. And when I did my reading, it was at this place called the Zinc Bar, which is in Soho. And I was talking to Eddie Berrigan at the end of the reading. We had to walk down the stairs and then up the stairs to come back out. And I realized it was exactly like those photos. I was completely replicating it. I was like making the scene in the exact same way.
Quintessentially New York.
Yeah, I was really happy with it. You know, and then we went up to do karaoke, so that was pretty fun too. But there was that moment where I thought, well, this is it. This is probably the pinnacle of my poetic career, is to just feel like I entered, even as a minor character, into this narrative, you know? So that's always been my great story for, I made the scene.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you will do so again.
Yeah, I would hope so.
So we're talking with Weldon Hunter. He's a local poet and a PhD student here. What specifically is your PhD on? You're studying local poets.
Yeah, so it's right now, it's funny because I'm struggling to get to the dissertation phase. I'm entering the fourth year of my PhD. I'm at the part where the dissertation should be definitely started. I'm a bit slow, as a lot of PhD students are in this process. And so The idea is that it's about two groups of poets in Vancouver in the 60s. One was a bunch of guys that were based out of UBC here called the Tisch Poets. Mm. Still alive, most of them. George Bowering, I think all of them are. George Bowering, the first generation, George Bowering and Fred Waugh and Frank Davey. And also then Bill Bissett's crowd, they were living downtown, and they were sort of like the Beats of Vancouver, and they did a journal called Blue Ointment. So I'm studying both of the two groups and looking at their journals in specific. So I have to go into special collections all the time and look at these old musty journals, which are pretty crazy, especially Blue Ointment is. And Blue Ointment published a lot of the weird marginal poets of the late 50s, early 60s Vancouver. And I'm looking at those two journals in terms of cooperation and collaborative practices. And that's in a nutshell what I would say I'm doing, what I'm supposed to be doing with my dissertation, which I spend a lot of time not writing, but thinking about. So, yeah.
Because in much of that time, you're listening to music. So let's get back into a local band.
Good segue, yeah.
Family Video. What can you tell us about Family Video?
Another local band, another kind of band that would be playing at the Mansion, which is where I tend to see a lot of the shows that I go to here in town. One of the great sort of like sideways kind of venues you can get to in Vancouver that aren't, you know, a club. So Family Video I've seen there. I don't know much about the lead person. I think she's a girl from Newfoundland. And then the other two people that are in Family Video are sort of hardened veterans of local bands. So Jeff Johnson of OK Vancouver OK is on bass. And the guy's drummer is from Bad Fate, so I've seen them, and they're a great sort of pop band here in town, and so I'd recommend checking them out. I think they're playing this Saturday or Sunday at the Mansion.
Okay, let's play a track called Family Video. Oh, sorry, the track is called Good Knife by Family Video, featuring Jeff Johnson from OK Vancouver OK.
I'm falling. this is Tony Bardock of the Pointy Sticks, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And this is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, and we're joined by Weldon Hunter. He's a local Vancouver poet, and that was another one of his local music recommendations, Family Video. They're a new project featuring Jeff Johnson from OK Vancouver OK on the bass, and on guitar is someone named Jam.
Yeah, that's the main person, the girl from Newfoundland, who I think writes all the songs.
Yeah.
It's like it's her thing. It sounds very cod rocky to me too. It's got a 90s kind of Halifax vibe or something.
And on drums it just says Friends, so I guess rotating.
It must be a lot of people.
Recorded in June 23rd, 2012. So there you go, another local recommendation from Weldon. Weldon's been chatting about all things poetry and reading from The Stella and Pony Years, which is his latest anthology. So who's the press again?
Small Ghosts Press out of Calgary has put it out. So one way you can find it is by contacting them, and they are on Etsy.com, which is a very new way for me to have books being distributed, but it seems to work, and they're really great. They even put out, right after this, they put out another book, a very short pamphlet called Four Poems, so some of my new stuff is actually put out, and they have a thing called the Zine Machine that they have, like, repurposed vending machines that sell literature in Calgary. Mm. So it's Carlene and Jeffrey who do Small Ghosts, and they've made these books. They're handmade, and they're out of the closet of the place they live in downtown Calgary. So I'm really glad I had a chance to work with them on this, and it's a quality looking book.
And you can buy it locally at Pulp Fiction Books on Main Street, as I did just 2 days ago.
Yeah, you have to get them to pull it out of the back, apparently. Contraband. So it'll make you. It's, you know what, it could just be a little too heavy for this city. You might have to go down and put your hard-earned money towards this book. It's crazy.
That's right.
Shameless.
Thanks, Weldon. So we've been playing some music and talking about music, and being a newcomer to the city, I've just been, and given the opportunity to do this show, it gives me the freedom to explore my love of music and the past, the history, and Vancouver music. And Dan Beeger from
Beha. I'm not sure. I've never heard it said out loud, actually.
From Destroy. I mean, when I think of a wordsmith working in the realm of rock and roll or alternative music, he comes to mind now as, like, locally one of the greats. Mm-hmm. And I've been just holed up in my room a fair bit when I'm not working, listening to his old records. You're a fan?
Yeah, I'm a fan of his. I remember buying City of Daughters. Actually, my roommate had it when I lived in Calgary at the time. We listened to that record a lot. And then I really like Street Hawk. I think that's a great album.
Mm.
Yeah. I think he's kind of hit or miss at times. But I always have found him as one of the more solid and substantial kind of lyricists. The kind of guy you can say is a poet, you know, and is also maybe doing it a different way.
Using the medium of music. We don't have much time to go, but even to start the conversation on what poetry is all about. I mean, from an academic perspective, what is in vogue right now? I mean, trends come and go and everything, and poetry is no different than anything else. So what type of poetry is in vogue right now? Is it possible to say?
Well, there's so many different kind of... I mean, if you up at UBC on campus here, I'm part of a reading series called Placophonics. And we host always local poets, but not local, sorry, local, but Canadian poets. And so we get a kind of a diversity of poets who are maybe... I would say if you're talking about poetry on campuses, which is where poetry has kind of been forced to go, I find a lot of it has turned into a very, very kind of academicized, and which I'm part of, obviously. So I make sure that my own poetry kind of escapes the kind of what I see being the kind of way that poetry seems to be produced by academic writers. And I'm not trying to create a false dichotomy, but to me it seems like a lot of it is very procedural or very... experimental in a way that that isn't as maybe attached to the kind of values I have for it, which, again, go back to this New York School kind of aesthetic of talking, addressing, kind of having it circulate amongst friends is the way I look at it. And so that's my interest in it, is having maybe a sense of... But for me, it comes down to just... it's a fun kind of thing to make. Like, to me, making a poem is sort of like making... Like when you're a kid and you're in arts and crafts and you you put together an ashtray or something like that. Well, that was what I did when I was a kid. I don't think you do that anymore. So to me, making a poem is very much the same thing as making an object. And so when I wrote these poems, they were very much just the idea that I had a blog and I thought I should try and write as much as I can. So I would just, I guess I'll sit down and write poems. So what I was doing that was in vogue at the time was us... a lot of poets were in the last 10 years, and it's kind of maybe not as... popular practice, but we were using Google search engines to mine for, you know, kind of everyday language or the kind of language you'd find of the internet. And I think everyone discovered this on their own about 2001, as I remember when I realized that Google search results were always in this strange disjunctive language, that because the words would repeat that you had this already ready-made poem. Mm. And I moved on from that to stitch it together, and they called that Google sculpting. So it's a very, for North American poetry of the experimental kind of camp, a lot of us were doing that. It was very trendy, and it's kind of moved on now to maybe being called procedural and conceptual.
Okay.
So I have a toe in that, but I also like to leave it at pretty lyric-based and have it be about people and have it be about situations. So I like to think I try to kind of be in the middle between the lyric and the experimental, but often there's a war between the two.
Well, I do highly recommend folks check out The Stella and Pony Years by Weldon Gardner Hunter. And as you can see, you can get it on Etsy, the website, wherever you are in the world, wherever you're listening, or locally at Pulp Fiction Books on Main Street.
Yeah, and I'd go to smallghosts.ca, that's the website. So if you're having any trouble finding it and you just absolutely must have it, then try and contact them.
Well, thanks so much, Weldon. We've run out of time. We're going to leave with a track from Myths called Labyrinth. It's been so great having you on.
No, my pleasure to be here.
We're going to have to make it far more regular than once every 2 years, because there's a lot more music to talk about too. So it's always a pleasure. And thank you. This has been Weldon Gardner Hunter, local Vancouver poet. This has been Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show. African Rhythms is right up next. So this is a track by Myths called Labyrinth. So bye from me and bye from...
Goodbye, Vancouver.
Bye from Melbourne. Bye for now.
hungry.
Me too.
And why is she eating that stuff? She must have picked it up from her trip back home. The smell's making me sick. Don't you think she should eat it somewhere else?
No, that's disrespectful toward Parveen. Actually, I think it's great that we can enjoy different foods.
What would you do if you were this witness? Safe Harbor Respect for All provides diversity workshops across Canada with funding from the Government of Canada. Visit safeharbor.ca. Respect for All. Pass it on.